Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Ring, 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 ring. May I please speak with Zoe?
Oh, hello, Lamorne. Let's patch in Hannah.
God, I forgot what it was like working with you guys.
Welcome to our show.
And welcome to our show with Zoe Lamorne and Hannah. And we're just so excited today. We have the most wonderful director person, all around great guy, Jake Kasdan, here, who directed our pilot and many episodes of our show, and also had a huge hand in creating the tone, developing the show just from the ground up. So we're very stoked.
Very stoked.
So good to see you guys. Love
how
this.
How you been? How's your time away from the show been treating you?
It's been a nightmare. Are you kidding me?
I will say Jake has directed, written so many things that everybody loves, from Zero Effect to Freaks and Geeks.
Right.
Two Jumanji movies, Bad Teacher, so many great things that I love, and I'm sure you guys love too.
Yeah, and I think that the question that's been burning the fans for ever at this point is, will Jumanji return? And if so, will that lovely repairman make another cameo?
And if so, are you in it? That's the question we get all the time. It was so satisfying though when we would show that movie and Lamorne would walk. Lamorne's in the second of the two Jumanji movies, and we would show the movie, and in the theater there was always like an audible excited reaction, like a little audience freak out when Lamorne would walk in right at the end. It was one of my favorite things.
It's always the reaction when Lamorne walks on screen.
Yeah, always. Yeah, yeah.
Usually because I'm wearing no pants.
Even when they're expecting it.
It was a bold but strategic move. You knew you'd get a reaction if you entered the end of the movie with no pants, and it worked.
Exactly. It worked. I've since been canceled, but
it was worth it. Yes.
Yeah, you're wearing a very long shirt. It's
So Jake, you were born in Michigan?
Yes, that's true.
Is that a comedy town? Is that a
big comedy state.
It's a great town. Detroit area. We moved away when I was like a baby. So pre-comedy.
Yeah. So where'd you get your comedy roots from? Is it a family thing?
I know.
I
will say this. Okay, so the Kasdans have played a huge role in my career because I actually did my first movie with Jake's dad, Lawrence Kasdan, who's a legendary writer, director, who is one of those people that can do everything. And I also went to high school with his super talented brother, John. Wow. And just love the Kasdan family. So I feel like maybe you got a little comedy from the family tree from me.
Yeah. Zoe. That's right. Zoe has an amazing long history with our whole family. That yes. is a great.
And
a
I
great
love your mom too.
Part of the story.
Meg.
Yeah.
Whole family. Love them all. Love them all.
Yeah. Zoe went to high school with my brother, John. And that was how the very first way that we met. And then, so we have this great sort of long road together, but I think that I pulled into the lead on the Zoe race when we did this show together for many, many years.
Yeah. I will say that we have done the most extensive work together.
Exactly.
I think one thing we're all curious about is I was the first cast member to get involved with the show, but what was it like before we were all, what happened? How did you meet Liz?
How did
you get involved?
Yeah, absolutely. I can tell you my journey with it started just a few weeks before yours. It was a wild thing where Liz, who I had met once or twice before, and I was a big fan of hers because she'd written some scripts that I'd read and loved, and I just thought she was such a funny writer. We didn't know each other well. She wrote me a note and said, would you think about directing this pilot? It had been a bunch of years since I had directed a pilot, so it was kind of a little bit out of nowhere, and we had some bunch of common people. She sent it along and I read it and just immediately said, yeah, absolutely. And it was actually one of these things where I had sort of almost decided that before reading it. I've had this happen once or twice, very lucky, fortunate thing where somebody calls and says, do you want to do something? And you just know that it's the right thing to do. Yep. And hearing from Liz about the pilot that would become New Girl was definitely one of those moments where I just sort of had this instinct, this is going to be great. She's so funny. And from the description, I could tell that I was going to love it. And then I read it and I just thought it was brilliant, you know? And it was kind of the way that can be sometimes with what we, you know, if you're lucky enough to do this, sometimes you make a decision like that quickly and it ends up being like a giant thing in your life. And for me, Freaks and Geeks was something like that, where it was similar, Judd called up and said, do you want to do this? And by the time I got off the phone, I was like, I think I want to do this. And I had never worked in TV before, you know, I hadn't read it yet. And about a little more than 10 years later, it was a very similar thing with Liz, where I just sort of had this feeling like this is going to be something great.
I don't know if you remember this, but you and I had lunch in Chicago and talked about Freaks and Geeks. Do you remember
that? Yes, I do remember that. That's so right.
This was before I dropped out of college to pursue my dream of being an actor. But you came and you were like, oh, do you want to? I really would love it if you auditioned for this.
Oh my gosh, I haven't thought about that. Yeah. You're right.
I was going to college at Northwestern. I was in the theater program and I had basically like just started. And you were like, hey, I've got this, you know, pilot, like, you know, it's going to be a TV show, obviously. And I was like, I just started school. I would love to audition.
Yes.
But I was like, I got to see what this school thing is like. And then, of course, like 6 months later, I dropped out.
I remember that vividly. And I haven't thought about it in really a long time, but that's right. That was another like turn in the road.
That was for Freaks and Geeks.
Yeah.
For Freaks and Geeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's usually opposite from me. Directors sit me down and say, please don't read for my thing.
Can I take you to lunch? I would like to make sure you don't be part of this project.
What? Yeah. I mean, I don't remember which role I would have been up for in Freaks and Geeks. It was probably like Freaks and Geeks. It was probably like all the female roles, right? There were like a lot of female roles in that show.
Yes. I'm trying to remember it. I'm not sure. I mean, we were casting that show in a sort of unusual way. That's right. Where we were kind of, we were open to the possibility of expanding and kind of shaping the cast, around beyond sort of what was in the script.
Right. So who
we found, we were kind of building it to the ensemble, although it ended up being very close to what was in the script, but you know, with some big kind of casting swings on that show where it sort of changed the shape of what it was. And in a lot of ways, to some degree, we extended that approach into what we were doing when we were casting New Girl, which was a really kind of comprehensive and intense process, but you know, similarly, like you know, it's one of the great casts that I've ever been fortunate enough to work with, and it was like we went through the yeah, that's what I meant, and one of the, you know, it was one of those situations where like we worked really. It was a big process, but it really worked out, you know?
Mm-hmm. I feel like when I talk to actors, especially over the past 10 years, I would say 80% of them in this town go, you know, I was almost in the cast of New Girl. And it makes me feel like every single person in this town read for the show. And
Jake and I know because we were like, as soon as I got cast, I was like, oh, I really, really want to be a part of the casting process because I just know how it is to come in for shows or movies. And it's hard. And I was like, you know, I can kind of be someone that maybe can make people feel comfortable. Also, we can see chemistry. So as soon as I was cast, even though I, against my lawyer's advice, he was like, well, the deal's not done. You can't do work before your deal's done. And I was like, I know, but I'm just gonna do it.
I'm a rebel.
So I joined the casting process and we saw
a lot.
Everybody in Hollywood,
yeah,
I feel
it feels like
yeah, we saw a lot of people. And I think, you know, part of it is that it was the, you know, the whole thing, one of the parts of it that's so interesting is just like the whole world of television has changed so dramatically in the 10 years since we were doing this. Yes. And, you know, it was sort of towards the end of an era where the conventional pilot season worked the way that it had for like the whole history of TV, you know, up until quite recently, where, you know, you develop the whole television development cycle is very kind of rigid, and like you sell scripts during one period and then they decide what they're going to pick up, and then everybody makes the pilots at exactly the same time, and there's this formal, you know, kind of like pilot season casting period where everybody's running around from audition to audition. I don't know. I mean, it still exists in some form, or at least did, you know, before the current world that we're living in, but not nearly to in the way that it did then. And so it was sort of towards the end of the period where, like, within the group of people who are out and auditioning and really getting out there, you know, they're going from thing to thing to thing, and you're seeing really a lot of people. And we did see a lot of people, although, you know, and like you say, I mean, Zoe was, before any of that even started, Zoe was in and gonna play this part. And that was kind of the, you know, first definitive like decision about, like, what, you know, that a lot of the show, it starts to become visible to us, like, from that moment. We're like, okay, it's Zoe Deschanel is this character, and we're going to surround her with, you know, brilliant people.
Right.
I knew that you were directing the pilot, that was like the deal sealer, because I was like, this is a hilarious script. I knew Liz, like, I didn't know her personally. I had read a play of hers years before and stuff, and I knew she was really talented, and I had friends that were friends with her and could vouch for her. But, like, you know, I was like, but the tone of the show, like, everything kind of rests on the directing and setting the tone for the show, because I'd never done, you know, more than like an episode or two of TV, or, you know, I did a few episode arcs, but I was never like a series regular.
Down a show like this, which is a whole different.
It's a whole other thing. When I knew you were directing it, I was like, I am in.
Oh, that's nice. That's
true.
That's nice to hear. I mean, it was, you know, I think when you're especially transitioning from, you were working a lot in the period leading up to that already. You'd been making all those movies. But it is a very different sort of, it's just a different process. I mean, there's a lot related about it, but, you know, there are many aspects of it, of series television, that are really different. And it was, you know, I loved being able to roll into that with you.
Well, it was such a gift to be able to, like, make something where, you know, you have you and then other really amazing directors that, you know, came on this show. And I really think that you being on, like, attracted a lot of other really good directors as well. But the fact that we were doing television, you have to make a show every week, no matter what. Like, we have to, and there's something so nice about that. Like, on a movie, there's, like, something kind of drawn out about it. And it's like, with television, you know, you're just going to make it no matter what. And it's kind of exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I always feel like that when you're doing the pilot, you know, if you're directing a pilot, you have a lot of opportunity to kind of help build what the thing is going to be and sort of get in there. And, you know, I always feel like directing a pilot is like being a member of a band. It's like being the bass player in a really good band, if you're lucky, you know, and, where you're trying to position everybody else to not only be great, but to set up something that they can keep doing for a really long time. You know, that's the cast. It's whoever you're working with behind the camera, the actual camera, all of that, you know? And as you, the further you go, I mean, it starts with the pilot, obviously, but by the time you, you know, sort of get into series, it's just incredibly clear that the whole thing is completely contingent on the writing and the cast. And we did bring in great directors, and we had great directors. It's not to diminish that fantastic contribution that a bunch of people came in helping us figure it out. And then, you know, throughout the series, we had great people. But it's a different kind of building right at the very beginning, because you have nothing to refer back to. So you're doing it for the very first time. And then, you know, as it continues, it really, everybody else sort of assumes the, what it is in a great way. And that's like really satisfying and fun to see, you know? And between this incredible cast we had and just such a funny group of writers, like like week after week and hardworking and like constantly punching and how can we make it funnier? And you do the table read and it's just like joke for joke. Like it's just like a stealth team of brilliant comedy people that were working on that show. So it was just a lot of firepower. It was really like an exciting, cool thing to be a part of. You know?
Yeah. Question. So let's keep it. I want to stick to the beginning or stay on the beginning for a little bit. I know when you talk about the beginning of the process, how fun it could be. You're seeing a bunch of actors come in, the writers are writing like dope shit. Like what's the most frustrating part about that process though? Starting from the beginning, what makes you pull your hair out? For those at home who don't know about this process, I know it's not all fun. It's not all fun games.
I just want to add to what you're saying, Lamorne, that like directing a pilot is probably like directing episodes like is obviously a, you know, it's a feat, but directing the pilot, because you're establishing the tone, it's a really, really important job.
Yeah.
You know, every decision's a big decision.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there's, you know, I guess, I don't know, it's like pull your hair out. I guess what I would say is, you know, there's famously in making TV and making TV pilots, there can be a lot of voices outside of the simple creative process of it. There's, you know, the classic thing, and I made a movie about this called The TV Set, is, you know, that there's sort of like all of this external kind of like executive pressure on something that can mess it up, either with you're not allowed to hire the actor or the notes are not good, or there's something about it that makes it really fresh and different, but that makes people nervous. And so they want you to change that thing, or, you know, there are a lot of ways that a pilot can get messed up. And while we really did not have a lot of that kind of interference here, I have to give credit to those people. It was not they loved it from early on. People loved the script. They got increasingly excited as we would bring you guys to them. You know, they would just look at the cast and everyone just, they got pretty psyched. And so while Liz, you know, certainly went through a development process and had notes and wrote many different drafts, like all pilots, we didn't have a lot of interference on this. All of that said, you're always kind of worried about it. Like I just go through everything like in this sort of defensive stance. It's like you're going to get that football to the end zone, and the end zone is getting picked up.
You mean the sport football, the sport you're talking about? For those like me who are not familiar.
I'm talking about this thing I put in my shoes. Yeah, exactly. You know, that there's this wanting to deliver it for everybody, you know, and make sure that you do the work and get the product so it gets on and then it can have its life, right?
I just wanted to talk about casting for a second, because I feel like that's a question I get asked a lot, which is, how did you guys get chosen at the end for this show? And I don't know if I know everybody's story about, if you remember first meeting Jake and Max and Lamorne. We know you've known Zoe for a really long time. Myself, did you know from the beginning? How did it all come together, that chemistry?
We knew that, we knew that the very first conversations I was having with Liz about this were, you know, about process, how's this going to work? And the very first thing I do remember like saying, cause I had sort of picked up from, Judd Apatow working on the Freaks, pilot, his thing was always, everybody has to read. You just always building a show like this, if you need an ensemble to work together this way, it was like, everybody has to read. And Liz was like, yeah, absolutely. That totally makes sense. We'll get into it. And she said, there's one thing though, which is we think we should approach Zoe. And I said, well, I know Zoe. I love Zoe. That's an obvious no-brainer. Yeah, she'll do it. That would be different. And then she hopped in. And from that point, and Zoe had done all this work. We knew she was a known quantity. We knew that, that we would build the show around her. And from the time that Zoe got into it, like, as she's describing, she was then part of a lot of the casting. We would do, sometimes we'd do sessions, you know, without Zoe, and then bring back people to read with Zoe. Sometimes she was just there. I mean, she was, my memory is you were really in it with us. Like,
I was there every day,
it every day.
I would volunteer too. I'd be like, hey, you guys need me? I just come in. Like, because I just really like wanted, like, in case somebody would be maybe like on the off chance that somebody would be like, maybe not good in a pre-read or something, but good with me. I was like, well, let's just like, I'll be there.
You had a great instinct that this is critically important, because in some ways, as I, like I was saying, it ends up kind of being more important than like it, the longevity is what you're looking for, right? It's like more important than what, just what happens in the pilot. Because, you know, you can have somebody have three scenes in a pilot, but you're going to be working with them, if all goes well, for years, you know? So like with Hannah, for example, that's the thing, like Cece's big in the pilot, great in the pilot, but in the rest of, but by a few weeks later, she's much more dimensional and expanded and has stories, and we're off, right? And so there's a little bit of like, what you're trying to find is beyond what is just in these 30 pages, what does it seem like it's going to be in the, you know, long term? The other thing about that I would say was key to this, and so impressive to me, was Liz realized quickly that, you know, in order to really feel the scope of that, we would need to keep updating the sides, what people are reading, well beyond what's in the script, because you can't necessarily make a decision of that magnitude from, based on, you know, two scenes. And also, you've heard the same two scenes 400 times. They're just not as funny to you anymore. It's like, you know what the jokes are, and, you know, so you might do those two scenes, but we're also going to do two other scenes. She would go home pretty much every night and write and craft and punch up sides with, you know, Brett Baer and Dave Finkel, who were running the show with her, who are also brilliant guys and who are around on the pilot as well, which is a little bit unusual to have more writers on the pilot than just the, it was a very fortunate thing. You know, she just had, they had this sort of great working thing. They really made each other laugh. And so we always had new sides. So it was like new stuff every day, you know, which was kind of a cool thing. And then you start to discover what people are capable of. I think in terms of everybody else, you know, my memory, and she would have to confirm this, but my memory, I know that Liz and Jake had worked together before. They had, that she was aware of his brilliance and had, I think, had him in mind as a possibility for that character. And he came in and owned it right away.
I got several emails from friends like Max Winkler and Jeremy Connor, director friends of mine, recommending Jake. Yeah. So I was like, okay, this guy's probably going to be pretty good.
Yeah, it was a well-known secret at that point. I mean, he was somebody that people knew was super funny and talented and versatile. And he and Liz had worked on something together. And
yeah, they worked on.
Were they on her movie?
Yeah. He was in No Strings Attached.
That's
Ivan Reitman.
That's right.
Ivan Reitman directed. Yes.
Which was the first thing I'd ever read of Liz's, and oh my God, that was such a funny script. It was at that time called Fuck Buddies. Yes.
Everybody was in that movie.
She loves changing the titles of her projects.
So many great people in that movie.
Yeah.
The salacious original titles.
She always titled. Yeah. So Liz, when she writes a first, I mean, I don't know whether it still stands, but like when I signed on to New Girl, it was called Chicks and Dicks. and she'd written this script that ended up being called No Strings Attached, and it was originally called Fuck Buddies. So,
yeah. Isn't that play you talked about reading? Wasn't that called Sluts?
No, it wasn't.
That was a different play.
But
that was a,
yeah.
That was a documentary.
That was a pilot she had done. Yeah,
documentary. It's a docuseries.
Yeah. I'd have to go back and look at the title, but I remember I actually didn't connect it that I had read a play of hers until I somehow was searching her name, and then I found this play that my friend had sent me because we were going to do a reading of it, I guess, and it never ended up happening. But I had remembered reading it and how funny it was.
So
we have Zoe's origin story, Jake's origin story.
Keep going. Max, I was in these very first weeks, I was in New York working on something else, and I was not in those very first casting sessions. But my memory of it is that, like, the first week, they had sort of been knocked out by Jake and Max. I was watching him remote, and I think he just kind of came in. I mean, Max was somebody who, you know, had been around a little bit and had done other pilots. People were aware of his work and how funny he was. He'd never had anything quite like this, obviously, but it was, he came, and it was a similar thing where it was like, he read Schmidt and it was like, oh, yeah, that's it. These two are the first two guys. It's like, these three are where it starts. And we kind of knew that really early.
And then you thought, we need two VJs to round out the cast.
Television host.
Listen, we should round it out by making sure we have a Canadian one and an American one.
That's right. We want all of North America represented in the VJ world.
What are we missing here? Yeah.
VJs.
Fox was really adamant that we get some VJs.
I am. And then basically, as is often the case when that happens, and ironically, that's not what we're talking about, but ironically, it was a very similar thing with Freaks and Geeks, which was like half the cast fell into place like in 10 days. And then we spent 3 months figuring out who was going to play the rest of the parts. And so similarly, you know, we started to have the core and needed to fill it out and figure out who the rest of everybody was going to be. And it just became more, we saw a ton of people remaining characters. So,
Hannah, I remember that, like, with you and I remember being like, that Hannah is just the most like somebody who would be my friend. And like that comfort level, you know what I mean? Like, you were just like, I had the most ease with you. I feel like that played a huge part. I mean, other than your performance was great. But I remember that our ease together played a big part in your casting. What do you think?
For sure. I think that there's also just this thing when you've been, you know, sometimes when you've been looking for who's going to play a character for a long time and you've been in those rooms for days and days, and it can get, you know, exhausting, or you can think like, is there something wrong with the scenes or the character? Or what can we do differently? Is it like, why is this so hard? And then somebody comes in and you're just like, oh, it's not hard anymore. It's that person. But, you know, it's just like a kind of a bell rings and they walk out and you all look at each other and you're like, look at that. She's here, you know? And I think that can happen, and it can, and it's really exciting when it does, you know? And I do think that that's it. Sometimes they just don't walk in right at the very beginning. It takes a minute for the right people to walk in. And Lamorne was part of that early process as well in a big way. And was, you know, somebody that we loved from the moment we met him, and another one of those things where it was this guy's really, really funny, and went through quite a bit of process. You could probably remember it better than I do, but basically, go ahead.
He took a show with Heather Locklear.
Why don't I let you explain how you took a show with Heather Locklear, and then we can take it from there.
because the process, and I've talked about this before, but I want to say this is the first time I'm talking about this with one of the decision makers. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was my first pilot season. I was reading for a lot of stuff and testing. And so I had the tests around the exact same time, but I remember being at the callback, just the general callback for the CBS show, The Assistants.
Yeah, yeah.
Starring Heather Locklear and TJ Miller. No. They had said, hey, we hear you're testing for
New Girl tomorrow.
Are you
promoting The Assistants?
that show has crashed and burned, my friend. It has fizzled out a decade ago. And so they had said, when I was at the audition, they said, hey, we hear you're testing for New Girl tomorrow. I said, yeah. They go, can we ask you to tank that audition? And I was like, I don't know how this process works, but whoever makes me an offer. I was like, whoever makes me an offer. And so I remember us going back going, hey, this network is going to make him an offer. Hey, New Girl, can you guys make him an offer? And the answer from casting was no. And so I went to the test anyway, and I decided I'm going to the test no matter what. I want this show. And then a call came in right before you signed the contract. A call came in from my agent saying, hey, don't sign the contract. I was like, what? Why not? They're like, well, you just got an offer. They made an offer.
They offered you.
They made me an offer. Yeah. So you can't say no because you can go and read for all these things and get passed on. So just take the offer. So that's what I did.
In the hand.
Yeah. Makes sense. You got to work. And I mean, that's a big deal. You know, that was with that character, which was Coach at that, that we were casting in the pilot. I do think with that character, probably the most, we were trying all different ideas of what it ended up being with Damon was just a little different than what it was in the original script. And so there was some of that exploration that I have to say, I can't remember exactly what was leading that. Liz would remember better than I do, but there was there was an evolution to what we were kind of reading people and trying to figure it out and changing the sides and all of that. And I do remember that I remember thinking you were so funny, and there was some moment I remember where we were kind of in it and then suddenly you were no longer available. Yeah.
It was hot gossip in the actors who had been cast circle, because I remember talking to Jake and Max. We were like, We saw him, we all came in for the tests, and
that's
we
right.
saw you.
We saw him outside. I remember
that.
And then
saw
he was
him
like,
outside.
He's gone.
And then
he
was gone.
So mysterious, yeah.
But I do remember this about that part. Every time I would come in, it'd be you, Liz, I think I want to say Brett and Dave, and Zoe. And I remember one time in particular, every time we would come in, everyone would be so like, hey, what's up, Lamorne? Hey. I feel like we were on first name basis at that point. Yeah. And I remember taking the offer and sitting in the Fox courtyard and you guys walking to go do the test. And I remember going, hey, guys. And you guys went, hey.
Like, we cold shouldered you.
You had an ex-boyfriend at this point.
Well, you were like, you were probably like, I mean, like at that point, there were like, a handful of people coming in for the test. Mm-hmm. This was like before we even thought about Damon or anything. We had this like handful of people that were all coming in to test, and you were my top person. And I was like, I pretty much thought you were going to be cast. And then you pulled out like last minute. And I'm like,
But I will say, it obviously worked out. Otherwise, we wouldn't have Damon.
That's why it was really nice that.
Yeah, I mean, it worked out in such a. Yeah, it's true. I mean, it made it so that. I mean, yeah, the short version of that was that, you know, Damon was somebody we knew and loved, but thought he wasn't available because he was on a different show. And then we sort of got the word that it sounded like that show probably wasn't going to come back. And so we could. he was like the last one in, like right as we were about to start. It was like, oh, maybe that could work. Maybe the, you know, his other show isn't a problem. Then we go, we did the pilot with them, have a great time with them. Then his other show does get picked up, so he can't do New Girl. So there was this sort of like, oh, now what do we do? But as you say, in a way, it there was something about the way this whole messy thing had worked out that kind of worked for us, because when we had that sort of shocking panic moment of we've made this pilot that we love and we don't really what, but now one of the guys is not going to do it. It was like, well, who should it be? And we all knew immediately, like, well,
Morning.
There's this hilarious dude that, you know, was right. Maybe we can, maybe his other pilot didn't happen. And lucky for us, it hadn't. And we were able to, you know, get you to join in this other character. Like,
I got a feeling you guys had something to do with that pilot not happening. I don't know. I mean,
really?
Yeah, I guess you guys threw a, you guys, I don't know, sabotage.
You think we were working behind the scenes?
They wanted you to do
We're like,
bad.
Heather.
Heather, don't you don't want to do this.
Show. You think we had an inside this. Person?
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
Welcome to our show. So now that we've gone through the cast, I feel like when we've talked about the pilot together, Lamorne, and Zoe and I, the pilot, we keep saying like it feels like a movie. It feels like a standalone movie and not like a pilot episode of television. Was that like an intentional approach that you had when you kind of put it together? Because it feels so different than any other pilot I've ever seen.
I've seen pilots that tried to be it afterwards.
You know, I think that That's always my hope for it, is that it feels like a little movie and that we shoot it in a way that feels sort of like it's in a movie language. You know, I think part of it is that there are conventions to what single camera comedies look like a lot of the time. And particularly then, there have been so many more of them in the time since. I mean, we were already well into that sort of, you know, there were a lot then, but there have been a lot more now. I think, you know, so part of it's just we were in a different kind of vernacular, just that, and I was very conscious of, you know, shooting it in a way that was more like how you'd shoot a movie. And then I think the other part of it is, you know, it's obviously who you're working with, the cinematographer, the design. It's like a lot of, there are a lot of decisions you can make along the way. But it was very much how we approached Freaks and Geeks, you know, which is, even though it's a comedy, we're going to try to give it the scope that you would if you were making like a movie about this. Yeah.
Now, that process from script to page, a lot of changes. Did you see yourself adjusting things? What did it start out as, and then what ended up being on the screen?
Yeah.
You know, I really do think of it as, it was one of the really great collaborative experiences I've ever had with Liz and Brett and Dave and with you guys. It was just like this very sort of fluid thing where everybody's trying to figure it out together and working towards the same thing. You know, I think the script evolved over time, partly because, you know, really because Liz has this sort of relentless joke thing of just like, it's going to be funny. Like, she's as kind of like talented and hardcore about that as anybody I know. Like, of just like, she's going to make sure it's funny, and she's really funny. And she, if the joke isn't landing, it's going to be a better joke. And if she sees something that someone else, she's never precious about it. She's totally receptive to other people's stuff. She loves it when you guys would riff. She was just like a great, you know, like a kind of intensity that to me is awesome.
An endless well of jokes.
Yeah, totally.
Liz Merriweather.
and so that makes it so you're just laughing the whole time. But then there's also like, you know, just this whole emotional story to it that we were very kind of like communicative about with each other, with you know, you guys doing the scene. So I'm sure that it did sort of like evolve as we were doing it. But my memory of it is that it was just this very kind of like, we're all in it together and let's figure this thing out. You know, Catherine Pope was the other executive producer at that
Catherine
stage.
Catherine Pope's amazing. Yeah.
Brilliant person who was kind of the other, you know, voice in all of those conversations in the office. And
very supportive. I just remember she was like, having a baby.
She was texting
Liz from like her C-section or something. It was like one of those things where I was like, this woman is the most dedicated producer I've ever seen.
Yeah.
She wasn't like, I'm going to take a day off because, you know, having a baby. She was like,
no,
we were getting emails from her. Like,
she was having two babies, this show and her baby.
Oh, yeah.
The show. Exactly.
Yeah.
I will say days off and friends are having.
There was something I wanted to mention that I thought was so smart. And I know that, and it was kind of related to something you were saying earlier, but about kind of, you know, knowing, you know, that you wanted the show to get picked up, which is obviously everybody's goal. But having been through it before, you had an idea of what, you know, the network and studio were looking for, and that we did do a ton of work, you know, like on the table read side before, because the table read of a pilot is like one of the most important things to kind of making the studio and the network feel like they, you know, feel kind of confident, you know.
Yeah, that, totally.
Because sometimes Cass gets fired after the pilot table read.
That's what I thought was
going to happen. Sometimes, you know.
It's terrifying.
Sometimes, yeah, table reads can be a real make or break moment. And I remember we did multiple run-throughs before we did the table read. I remember we did one, you know, with cast member, like people filling in for cast members that we didn't have. We, you know, Liz and Brett and Dave would be doing rewrites. We'd do pre-reads. We'd get notes. It was really, I had my script like marked up to a T. And, you know, once you get going, you're not doing, you know, you're kind of cold reading scripts, you know, once you're in the season. But that pilot table read's really important. And I thought that was so smart that you really, really coached us all through that read.
That you're right, that's can be a critical moment. And, you know, we knew that like the cast was just rocking. I mean, that was unconfusing. It was clearly a great cast. But it's certainly a moment where something can go screwy if for the wrong reasons, where something doesn't land in a table read or something feels like some element of the story isn't doing what you want, or something reads harsh instead of funny. I mean, it's like there's any number of million things can happen in a table read that can just sort of make people uncomfortable right as you're like a week before you start, and which is like the worst moment to
be
reactive to. It's bad for confidence. It's a bad sort of creative place to be. So the way you can sort of avoid those kind of problems is to just make sure that the table read goes really well. And we knew that that would be important. We also knew that it wouldn't be that hard here, but it, you know, because this, it was really funny and you guys were great. And you know, usually it goes well if those things are in place. It's just, you never know. So yeah, we're being, you know, super make sure that it's buttoned down.
I have a really vivid memory of I think I was only there for a day or two of the pilot, but I had to do that phone call where Jess is on the other side saying, you know, two boobs Johnson. And I was just like, I'm sure Lamorne felt the same way, where you kind of show up and your whole thing is like, don't get fired, don't get fired, don't get fired, don't get fired. And they needed someone to read the other side of the phone call and to be Jess. And I don't know what happened, because we were on like just like a little propped up set really, really quick. And there's a million other things going on. And so you did it, Jake.
Me? And I played Jess.
And I was like, this is so terrifying that this man who has so much control over this moment is now. And I'm hearing you go like, Rebecca Johnson. Two boobs Johnson. And I'm trying to stay in this call.
Yeah, for the people listening, sometimes you're off doing something else for some reason and you can't be there for off camera. If you have
sometimes
like
you do two sides of a phone call at different times, exactly.
Yeah.
So on some lucky occasions, you get me reading the other side of the phone call.
Though I do remember that we shot a scene that
surely
never made
there
it.
Would have been someone better for that than me.
Johnson, two boobs Johnson. It's a very clear, traumatic memory. But then what was funny about it is that you guys brought me back.
You're lucky to have.
Well, I was just like, he's so close and he's watching everything so closely. What if I say it wrong and I got fired? I mean, trauma.
One of my
your performance was brilliant, but I will
thank
say
you. That's
that,
what I was looking for. Yeah. I was what I was trying to get to is how was I?
You were amazing.
You made a great Jess. It was really my job that was in jeopardy.
The thing that was funny though is that we shot a scene that never made it into the pilot, where you guys dressed me up as a gigantic bird at a photo shoot, and then brought in a like a vicious
condor, bird.
Yeah, a condor or I don't know what it was. And they said, quiet on set, nobody speak.
It was a vulture.
Bird can get spooked. Yeah, a vulture, and it will attack you. And but I have to speak. And it was the side of the phone call, and they needed someone to read the other side. And Jake, I will say, you did not read the other side of the phone call then.
we found someone more qualified.
You're like, I don't want to be attacked by a bird, is what I thought the thinking was.
It sounds like Jake
anyone
was
who
involved,
spoke could be attacked.
It sounds like Jake is involved in a lot of hazing, okay? Because he made you dress up like a bird, brought in a goddamn vulture, and didn't use it. For me, there was a moment, I think, where you dumped yogurt all over me.
Oh, yes.
At some point. And I don't think that got you.
A yogurt bath or something?
Yes, yogurt
you're
bath.
Bathing in yogurt. You're,
yes. Was I there for that?
That yes. was the episode 102,
yeah.
right? Where it's like
it was a flashback.
It was Latvia.
Latvian
initiation.
I was so excited
that.
About it. I was like, oh, this is going to look so great. Oh, this is going to crush. This is going to kill. No one's ever
going to see it. I do remember the thing with the vulture. That was the thing I will always remember about that was, and I remember the scene was funny, and it was just, you know, things get shorter as you're cutting them down. You just start, you know, you want the tightest possible version. For some reason that fell away. But I remember with that scene, we were in the cutting room and we're looking at it, and it's all kind of working in a fun way. But then I remember Liz saying, like, I'm not sure we should have a vulture in our pilot. seems like something you shouldn't do.
I will say, like, I felt that way in the moment.
Yeah, exactly.
In the moment, I thought, this feels like a risky idea. And the director is choosing not to speak during this moment. When he did this yesterday, I feel like we all should be scared. Great instincts all around.
And there was a moment, too, as well, that I remember vividly that I feel like pretty much helped me get into. I know there was a lot of, you know, character traits that would change from my character throughout episode to episode. I know you guys were trying to find who Winston was. And I forget the episode. I'm not sure if it was the first episode of season two where we're in the bar and Nick is making fruity drinks. And you were yelling out notes to me. You were throwing us, sometimes for all those out there in listener land, you know, the director and writer sometimes will toss out jokes from behind the camera. And I remember you were trying to get me to behave in a certain way, perform in a certain way, and I couldn't hear you. And God. I remember you going,
these stories never end well for me.
No, it's great. It was great. It was great because I started getting it. I started understanding. Yeah. All you said was, you go, more girly. I was like, oh. And but you didn't mean it. And I remember how you meant it. And that became my thing for every time I had a drink on the show. I would behave this way, and the memes that go around where I'm just kind of looking at Nick and I say, look at me being so naughty, it's all over the place. And I just remember going forward from that moment being don't just do what's on the page, like, be bolder, you know, try other things.
Get
weird.
That to
get
me
loose.
Is the mark of a great director, is when they, you know, like, they say the thing that makes you, that opens up your imagination so that you can really inhabit the character.
Yeah.
And you know, and I think Jake is just such a great example of a great director who really, like, allows you to be creative in your own right, but, like, guides you into the place where you're going to be your best. But that's a good example.
Thank you.
That's
it's with a series in particular, so much of it, like I say, is just trying to figure out something that can be great in the moment, but also hopefully that you can see signs of how it's going to be great for a long time. And that the writers are going to pick up on and go, like, oh, yes, there's a whole episode about this. There's a whole, you know, we could do a whole story arc about this. And part of that is just inspired by what you're seeing from people. And then part of it's just the million great ideas that people have to come up with in order to sustain these things, you know, just great writing. But there's an enormous part of it that's like, how do we you know, what are we seeing from what we're, what the cast is giving us that shows us what it's going to be. And I do think, you know, Lamorne, like you say, that it, the Winston just got, it was, it's definitely like, as the series went on, it just got sort of deeper and richer and more interesting and funnier. And this is what he's, I mean, it was, we would always say in editing, like, oh my God, this is like, you know, as we would get later, we was like, what he's doing here is just so kind of brilliant. And like, this has been there and we could have been, you know, it's just like the thrill of watching this emerge as you just sort of like the, you know, the character filled out and what you were doing with it just got so funny week after week.
Oh, thank you.
I have now, to say this too, because I have that similar moment that Lamorne just shared of something that you said to me that stuck with me so strongly. And I don't think I've ever told you, Jake. So I remember, and I shared this with Zoe and Lamorne, going in for that final test. And that's what's kept me through the pilot, I feel like, feeling so strong. I went for the final test, and I talked about the thin walls that existed at Fox. So all the girls that had gone in before me had read, and they had read in a very similar, had made similar choices, where it was a lot louder, broader. They had made those comedy choices, and it sounded funny. And I was like, oh, everybody's doing it this way, and they've made it this far. And I had a very different approach to Cece. And I remember walking in the room going, well, maybe I should just do it like these far more seasoned actresses are doing it. Maybe I've been doing it wrong. Like, I don't know. And but I decided at that moment when I sat down with Zoe to do that chemistry read to do the choice that I and read Cece the way I had been doing it, which was a lot more deadpan and straight ahead. And and I will never forget, because usually you don't hear anything in the room. No one says anything to you in the room. And I'll never forget you turning back to Catherine, Liz, Brett, and Dave, and casting and saying, that's how it's done. And it was just like this moment. And I, it really like impacted me to continue the audition, making the same choices, and then going to like my first ever set, really, and to know that I had made that right choice and that you had kind of given me that gift in the room. It was really powerful. And I don't remember what I had for breakfast this morning, but I remember you saying that to me a decade ago. It was really powerful.
I think, you know, that's awesome. I love hearing that. I always think it's weird when people want to be stingy with positive feedback. Like, it's like I, if someone's great, tell them they're great. I mean, it's hard enough. And especially like with actors coming into audition, it's like, it's so vulnerable and hard. And if it's not going to be, if they're not vulnerable, then it's because they're sort of beat up by it. And I mean, it's just like the process of auditioning is nerve wracking for people coming in, and
that's why I want to be there. That's why I want to be there, because I was like, I know what this is like to go in for things. And like, I started working when I was 16 years old. So I had been on a lot of like devastating auditions in my life, you know, and I wanted everybody to feel comfortable. And it was so nice, because it's true, Jake, you're always so positive and make people feel so comfortable. And I think that just like putting people at ease, like it's just like creates that baseline for just a good experience for everyone and for them to do their best, rather than, you know, people starting on edge, like thinking they're not doing a good job. Nobody's going to do a better job if they think they're doing, you know,
if they think that the audience is exhausted or something, you know, I mean, like, which can also happen sometimes, because you can get, you know, can, but by the time you've been sitting there for a few hours, you can get a little like, but it's sort of on the people who are doing the auditioning to you know, who are reading people to, like, you know, stay alert, be the other person in the room. But yeah, like, you know, like you still have the basic social responsibility to be.
Are you saying you could get tired listening to the same scenes be performed over and over again for hours on end? That's weird.
I'm not saying that you could.
I will say honestly,
and it's like I said it before, but I would say what is always amazing with that is you can get kind of worn down and you can get in your own head about, like, you know, why is this hard? Why am I having trouble focusing? And then someone will walk in and you'll just be like wide awake all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just that someone will walk in and just open your eyes with what they're doing. And yeah, exactly. And so, and that's the cool part. You know, you got it. Sometimes it's like what I was describing, where you get, you know, okay, we've been casting for a week and we have three of the leads, and then sometimes it's you got to earn it a little more, but it's still something really kind of great when people come in and you're just like, ah, that's so exciting. Yeah.
Now, obviously, I want to switch topics a little bit. We can dive back into this in a little while, but obviously, working with such an amazing cast. Like you did on New Girl, probably.
And humble, modest, amazing.
Yeah. The most humble cast.
Yeah, I'm just saying, a clear bright spot in your life. But your career took a downward turn, turn when
I said it at the time. It's all downhill from here.
And it was. You were obligated to direct and create the new Jumanji series. What was that process like going backwards?
Oh my God.
It's a lesser cast. How'd that come about?
It must have really sucked going to Hawaii and stuff.
Yeah, it's
filming in paradise, like, after filming
really
in
does.
Los Angeles.
Beautiful
Century City to... Ooh, Hawaii.
It was a change of pace. There's no question. It was a whole different ball game, but in many ways, but at the same time, a lot of the basics of what you're doing are actually not that different. I mean, there's on a movie like that, there's some stuff that is really different. You know, there are a lot more digital ostriches in Jumanji than in New Girl, and there are other differences too. There's this, you know, it's more physical. Obviously.
Wait a minute, you're saying the vulture could have been digital, Jake?
We definitely, we realized
what they realized is the vulture could have been digital.
Noted.
By the time we got to Jumanji, we realized that if we're gonna have a vulture, it should be digital, and there is a vulture, by the way. You know, I think that you'd be surprised. I mean, you came and did a day with us on Jumanji, Lauren. Yeah. And like when you're standing there doing that, I mean, it's different kinds of, like, that particular thing was like not exactly a hard comedy scene, but it doesn't feel... Basically, it feels like the same job, right? It's like you're doing the same thing.
It does.
Fundamentally.
It was an interesting prep, though. You know, my scene, obviously, was the scene. It was a quick scene.
Yeah.
But prior to that, I had to do this thing where I got... Was it motion capture or something, where I stood in this thing with a million cameras?
They scanned
you. That's not something you do.
That wasn't on New Girl. Yeah.
No, we weren't doing LIDAR scans of everybody. Yeah. There's, you know, it's obviously a lot more physical. There are differences, but the basic thing of what you're doing every day, which is like, how do we get the best version of this scene working with these people? It's not that different. And that cast is, they're amazing, obviously. They're also just like, they show up and want to figure it out and do
their pros
best thing.
And they all had to read too. And that's what's important.
How many times did The Rock audition? How many times did The Rock audition for this role?
The studio.
I'm not sure The Rock, I'm not sure he knows what that is.
He's never had to audition in his life, you guys. He's
just like Kevin Hart's.
He's sitting in Hawaii, just waiting to do movies. There. Yeah. He's just, he's living life.
Was there a challenge for you knowing that a prior IP of that already existed, having to do it justice,
the original? Yes, I mean there was the pressure of that's always with anything that's rebooted or a sequel or there's always that concern. Now there are so many things that are, there's so many more things that are based on something else than that aren't, for better or worse. I don't really think it's for better, but even though I've had a good experience doing that, I like original stuff. I think, there was I knew that what we were doing was very, very different. People would, when they ultimately saw it, they would not feel like we were, we were doing a lesser version of the original movie. We were just in it's a completely different idea. Yeah. And it also had this additional, sort of weight of the original movie is one of Robin Williams' kind of like staple movies for a lot of people. And, he's like a hero to anybody who works in comedy. And so you kind of want to be honoring the work, so that we were conscious of all of that, and we were conscious that it's the kind of project that when you say, like, when people read there's going to be another Jumanji, they're just immediately suspicious of it. I think that's probably appropriate, there's a natural sort of audience skepticism about anything they love coming back in some new form. And so then it's on you to, like, show them why you did it and that they could have a new good time with it. So it's part of the thing,
Well, I say you did that. Congratulations.
You did a great job.
You should continue what you're doing.
You should keep doing it. I think you're on to something here. You got it now.
Oh, well, thank you.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like Eco Eye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun, too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
I actually remember, because your brother was a friend of mine in middle and high school, I remember reading an article about you in the LA Times after you directed Zero Effect.
Uh-huh.
Yes. and then my mom had clipped it out and she was like, look, that's John Kasdan's brother. And I remember reading the article and you were like, what, 23 or something when you directed that movie?
Yeah, something like that.
You were a baby.
Yeah, I was really...
I couldn't even read. I was really young.
I love that movie so much.
Oh, thank you.
So good.
I just saw it again for the first time in a really long time. And I was really young, which seemed crazy to other people then, but didn't seem crazy to me. And now in retrospect, I think about it and it seems kind of crazy. Like it's hard to believe sort of, you know? Yeah. And it's also been a while now. Just also sort of shocking. And that's why I'm telling you, the 10-year anniversary of the debut of New Girl was just like, what? How is that even possible?
But I can't believe it.
It's partly because it continued for so long. I mean, New Girl is the only show prior to New Girl, I'd never been on a show that had made it to a second season. And I'd been on some shows that I love, you know.
Freaks and Geeks was only one season?
One season, yeah, 18 episodes.
Oh, and
And I had worked on Undeclared with Judd as well.
Which is so great, too.
Which was that show. Yeah, I mean, it was, and that was another like very short life, you know, working with Judd and Paul on Freaks. It was like this sort of definitive moment for all of us, but it was only 18 episodes. So I remember when we got to episode 19 of New Girl, and it was clear that it was like, you know, people were watching and we were going to at least get to keep going for a while. I remember thinking like, oh, wow, this is what it's like to make it to the end of an actual network season and know that you're coming back for another one. And it was exciting. And, you know, so we got to have the experience continue for a bunch of years, which I guess is maybe why it's so shocking that it's been that long since it started.
It's also so interesting because that show, usually after a show is done and off the air, and then maybe it lives in reruns, but that's like belongs to a certain era. But now with streaming, so many people
think it's
a brand new show on Netflix that's just started.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to ask you guys is, you must just out in the world have encountered this sort of thing that seems to have happened in the last couple of years, people discovering the show for the first time, like that Netflix. I just feel like there's been this whole new generation. I keep hearing about my friends' kids and teenagers and stuff. Can you feel it out there?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. Loudly. It was almost like, you know, there was like a second where there was like a kind of a little bit of a lull. And then all of a sudden it was like, people coming up, especially when things open back up from the, you know, a little bit opening back up from the pandemic and everything. Yeah. And all of a sudden, all the people who binge watched New Girl coming out of the woodwork. And it's kind of been nice to hear from everybody because it's really such an affectionate fan base of this show. Usually it's people coming up saying like, oh, these feel like my friends, or I watch it with my friends or my partner, or, you know, Jess is like me, or I get all kinds of things, but it's almost always just like very kind and affectionate and not entitled. It's just like such a just nice group of people who like this show. So it's really,
and it's interesting too, because a lot of people come up to me now and they know the show. They've clearly binged the show. But when I say maybe, I've gotten this maybe 10 or 15 times where someone goes, you're on that show, it's Jess. And they remember the song and they remember it's Jess, and they just binge the whole thing without looking at the name of the show.
That's the other thing that also is different is in the first run of our show, you'd have to wait week to week and then wait all summer for a new season. And now you meet people and they're just like, I just watched all of New Girl this weekend. I'm like, that's...
unhealthy
hours of television.
I know.
And so they know it intimately in such, it's a very different experience. So I would assume binge seven plus seasons.
And it's just totally, because it's this big body of work, right? I mean, it's like, and you know, I was you know, more present in the first couple of years. I mean, I was very present in the first couple of years, and then I started working on other things simultaneously, and there would be periods where I would be away making a movie, and then I'd come back, which was, you know, like this wild, it was like a home base kind of for me. In those later years, I wasn't there day in, day out. For you,
you were
guys,
always watching the edits and stuff.
I was always watching the edits.
Yeah, you were always.
I was always around. I was just not always... every day.
We missed your presence.
I was always a stone's throw away, but but you know, I remember like getting to the end of those last couple seasons, like the last couple seasons were simultaneous to the Jumanji, the first Jumanji. And I was away for a big part of that. And I remember I'd still watch the episodes that come out. And it was just like, I remember thinking these characters have gone so many places. These writers have come up with so many stories. And, you know, if every episode has an A story, a B story, and a C story, and there's 150 of them or whatever it is. I mean, that's hundreds of story ideas. And to get to those hundreds of story ideas, there's hundreds that they've discarded, right? Like it's always, because it's never the first idea. It's always like, you know, what's the best version of this? So, for everybody involved, it's just this massive, you know, 7-year body of work. And to think when you hear now from these, like, I've had a bunch of my friends have said, you know, my teenager in the last 2 weeks watched the entire series or that kind of thing. And you just go like, that's so great. Like that it's still completely alive for these kids and that, for a new and for older people too. And that like, it still feels really like relevant and on, and the performances are just as good now as they were then. And the writing is just as good now as it was then. So it's like, I love it. I just love that that during this crazy couple of years we've all had, that's been a source of, you know, some entertainment for some people. It's great.
I wonder too, if you're watching, like binge watching a show that took 7-8 years to shoot and you watch it in the weekend, is it just like a flip book of aging? Like that's what it feels like. Yeah. It must be so strange. Cause you know, it's 7 years of watching these actors who, you know, you don't really fully address time.
Yeah.
In sitcoms.
No. Well, I had two pregnancies on the show.
Babies were born.
Yeah. I had two pregnancies.
Yeah. I was like, there are two seasons where I was just like, why is Jess always holding her laundry basket?
Yeah.
So many things happened. And it feels like what's interesting is nobody who's binged the show ever says or comments on that at all. It just feels like this comforting group of friends that they can always just put on and it feels really good, which always feels really nice to hear.
Was that intentional that you kind of made the show was kind of evergreen, you know, it didn't feel dated. I mean, except when you see Jake Johnson or Nick Miller's phone, it's
right.
Flip up.
Which was outdated at that
even then, right? Yeah,
But was it sort of intentional to keep it kind of evergreen?
I guess so. I mean, I think we were, there was sometimes, again, you'd have to ask Liz and Brett and Dave. I think there's a little bit of a, you know, being, there's always a little bit of a question in your head about like how topical, or like, are the references going to seem like 2 years from now, are these references going to just seem really like 2 years ago, or is it, you know, like there can be sometimes an awareness of that kind of thing, but I don't know. I don't remember thinking about it that way. Exactly. I think you're just trying to make it really funny, and it's still, if in the places where we were successful in that, it still is, you know, and it's dense. The other thing with New Girl that is just like, I think a sort of under, almost like a technical detail of it is, it's just so dense with comedy and stuff. Like each episode is so packed in some ways, more than probably more than any other show I've ever worked on, just in terms of like sheer kind of amount of stuff in each 21 and a half minutes, you know? Oh, yeah. And so it kind of like, you can watch them repeatedly, you know, and discover something new.
I've always said that there's so much comedy in it, and there's so much stuff that we didn't use, so many alts that you could create an entire seven. This is my pitch, and it'll happen if you pitch it. Just have someone go in and recut every episode and just switch the jokes and just change the jokes. Add the things that didn't work, and just have the alternate New Girl.
Whenever they were adding, remember, like they added extra episodes to some seasons, and we were like shooting a crazy amount of episodes. And I was like, guys, just take some of that stuff that we shot already and cut a new episode.
Yeah.
Here's the big question, Jake.
Fox was like, no.
Like, we don't like it.
We want actually a new one.
We want a new one.
I feel like one of the number one questions that we also get asked is if we will ever do a reunion. And who knows if we will. Yeah. But if we ever did one, would you direct it?
Of course. I mean, if you know, there would be, it's totally like, can you imagine such a thing? I think, you know, it's if you guys and Liz were doing that, I would love nothing more. So it's so much fun.
Sweet.
Great.
Sweet.
Great. All right. It's set. Okay.
You got to get her.
That's why we created this entire podcast, to put people on the spot.
Just one by one, get people enlisted. Exactly.
Yeah. And they're like, darn it, I said I would do it on that podcast.
Out there now.
It's on record.
It's on record.
It's basically like signing a contract.
Yeah. Jake,
we're sending this to the lawyers.
Jake, what is next for you? What is next in your life?
What are you working on? What's next?
You know, got a bunch of stuff kind of percolating, and we'll see what actually happens first. I've spent a lot of this year working on the Doogie Kamealoha MD on Disney Plus, which just started. That's Doogie Howser. Yep. We're back in Hawaii, and I was, we were there. I did the pilot for that. And then, Melvin, who works with me, and I, you know, were some of the people who produced that series. So, I was working on that sort of first half of this year. And,
is that Aaron? Is Aaron working on that? We have some New Girl people on it.
We had Aaron on it.
Aaron
which
O'Malley
fantastic.
Was one of our awesome producers.
Wonderful. And Courtney Kang created it, who had worked with Melvin and I on another show on Fresh Off the Boat, which is a different show that we were doing
awesome
sort of
show.
Simultaneous to New Girl. And, you know, fantastic cast. Actually, Max Greenfield.
Oh, great.
May or may not. stroll through at some point. Watch closely. You may spot him. I've been working on that. And then since then, been sort of have a couple of different series that we're developing and a couple of different movies that we're developing. And we'll see what happens next. But, you know, trying to figure it out. And
Project Roulette. With
yeah, a little bit, exactly. There's always a little Jumanji happening in one corner, and
as long as it's in Hawaii and the birds are digital.
Yeah, you have to keep at least 50% of your work in Hawaii, and then
That's what's funny, because I was in Hawaii a lot on the first movie. I was there for months, and we were mostly in the sort of jungle locations on Oahu. And it's really hard to get to. It's gorgeous, but it's very physical, and you're kind of, you know, sweaty and getting eaten by bugs, and you're in this beautiful place. We were doing all this good, but it was just like really intense. I loved it, of course, but it's intense. And then we came back for Doogie, and it was like, we're at people's houses on the beach, and it's just like beautiful. Oh, this is what you're saying. You go to the beach, not the jungle, and it's just really chill. Yeah. We love shooting there, though. It was cool.
It's amazing.
I highly recommend it.
So, Jake, we do this thing in our interviews called Nick's Box.
There we go.
So in this segment, we crawl into the back of Nick's closet and pull out the memories that the cast and crew of New Girl have kept hidden for years. So, Jake Kasdan, what's your favorite memory from your time working on New Girl?
You can only pick one.
My God.
And the ones you don't pick are dog shit. That's what you say.
It's almost like...
It can be a standout memory, embarrassing.
Yeah.
It can be something, anything.
It's funny because it's like, it's such a big chunk of a life. it's hard to even separate out anecdotally like that. You know, it's not real specific, but my strongest association with it, I think, is just being on that set, that first, like what it felt like to be shooting that show in that first season, like in the pilot in the first season, when it just had this like kind of, there was just something like completely electric about it, and it stayed that way.
I was gonna say that exact word.
It just,
so
like,
when
there
you
was
said
just
that, I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah, and it must be true. There was just something like it's not funny, but it is true. It was just like, it was like this sort of, there was something buzzy about the whole thing of like, can you believe we're doing this? It's hard to put a finger on why. It just felt like completely alive and exciting. And it was like, you know, nerve wracking. It was a little bit of a high wire act, and we were always kind of like catching up. But my primary association was like, this is just the coolest place to be working. And like, you know, alive and fun. And then, you know, it was intense as well, but it was just that is my strongest kind of like sensory association with it, was this wild experience that remained. It's just that it was brand new the first season, and it was like, you know, surprising kind of.
It was so fun.
Yes, well, indeed. And we'll see you at the table read for the reunion.
You're locked in
hopefully
now.
Hopefully before. If not before.
Hopefully.
Thank you, Jake Kasdan.
Thanks, guys. And that was our interview with Jake Kasdan. We love him so much, and we're so grateful that he's our friend and he joined us for the show. You've been listening to Welcome to Our Show, a New Girl recap podcast. Welcome to Our Show is a production of iHeartRadio, hosted by Zoe Deschanel, Lamorne Morris, and Hannah Simone. Our executive producer is Joelle Monique. Our engineer and editor is Daniel Goodman. The Welcome to Our Show theme song was written by Zoe Deschanel, performed and produced by Zoe Deschanel and Pierre DeReader. Follow us on Instagram at Welcome to Our Show Pod. If you have a question you'd like us to answer, you can email us at welcometoourshowpodcast@gmail.com. Don't forget to rate, subscribe, and share far and wide. Thanks for listening. We'll hear you next week.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid Kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Health Aid Kombucha.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox